Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. And this is Carl, and this is part of the Incredibly Strange Film Commentary Watch for Halloween week. We want to welcome you all to our commentary watch of Grave of the Vampire, and I would also like to welcome a good friend. We've been Facebook friends for forever, but this is actually the first time we've ever talked and met, and that would be Ryan Salter. Ryan, say hello.
Hello. Glad to be
so
here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a horror fan, and I'm a movie fan, and that's basically that's my life is horror films and movies.
And let's not forget our two special guests in the background. You might as well introduce them because they will be heard during this commentary.
They will make themselves heard. I have two parrots, Sam and Jinjin, and they can be brats. So, yeah.
Well, the nice thing is, if you hear them screech, it kind of works. It kind of works with the film we're going to watch. So hey, it's good sound effects.
Well, that's fortunate. But I did bribe them, so I gave them treats, so they might be quiet.
We never know, but it doesn't really matter. These are fun commentaries. You know, it's not like we're getting paid for it like Troy Howarth and Dan Kramer. But, you know, that's part of the charm. So what we're going to watch tonight is a film called Grave of the Vampire. And it's a film from 1972. Stars William Smith and Michael Pataki. William Smith, both are very much B-movie stars. William Smith, probably his biggest role that I know him from is Attack of the B-Girls, which is a alien sexy women come in and basically just fuck the guys and kill them. Yeah, that kind of movie. And Michael Pataki has been in several films. He was in Rocky IV. He was also in Zoltan, The Hound of Hell. Wonderful stuff. And these are, you know, it's this type of film. But this film particularly was written by David Chase. David Chase, if you don't know the name, you certainly will know The Sopranos, which was his show that he produced and wrote. For HBO, and probably the greatest television show of all time. So you got to start somewhere, and you might as well be doing a horror movie. So before we get started, let's just get some. Where did you first see this film, Ryan?
I believe it was in the 80s. It was on one of those late night, like Night Flight or Up All Night, or maybe even. Joe Bob Briggs, was that his name?
Yeah, Joe Bob Briggs.
In ages. I grew up watching these kinds of movies, so this one.
Yeah,
brought
back when you agreed to do this, I sent you the film, the preview, and you got back to me and said, "Oh, I remember this one." So, yep, this has some really interesting twist to it, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. So, the movie is on YouTube, so you want to get the movie ready. Okay, we have it right at 000 because it goes right into it. Okay. And what we will do is I am going to count down for five. I will say 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And on go, you hit the play button, and we work it from there, okay? You all ready, Ryan?
I'm ready.
Okay, so let me get over here. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. And look, it's a bunch of boxes, and it's a crypt, and it's Croft, and that's not Kraft, okay? This is not mac and cheese. Okay, and you see the all the people in it. No one you've ever heard of, which is okay. And the unwilling mother, we'll get to that momentarily.
I don't recognize her name, but she looks so familiar. She really looks familiar.
And basically, every other name you're seeing here, you've never heard of. Which is okay. It's okay. And you get a little bit of music. Not much. Very foreboding. You know, you might want to move the camera a little bit. I'm just saying.
I might mess up the pretty awesome lighting.
Yes. Now, I first saw this movie at the drive-in. Now, anyone who has been following me for a while knows how important the drive-in was. I was 14 years old when we moved to Bradford. And this was part of 1973's Halloween film that he did. Okay, you got two teenagers in the car. And God, I'd love that car.
I think most of this movie's budget was spent on the cars.
Yeah, seriously. Now, the interesting thing about this movie, and we'll get into it when it becomes more apparent, but this film actually was a very, very much an influence for Abel Ferrara and his film, The Addiction. And I'll explain that in a little bit. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not saying that a graveyard is the best place to make out. I just don't think it's the best place to make out.
How many of
these movies have you seen where they make out in a graveyard and, like, they're both dead?
Well, I mean, okay, so she's what, 17? And he's what, 43?
Something like that.
I'm really not thinking he's a teenager.
You're going to get into a sequence here which is pretty fucking brutal. Now, back in the day, in the 70s, the PG rating was a lot less stringent than it is today. You know, they put in the PG-13. This was rated PG. Supposedly, there was an R-rated cut, but they cut it down so they could get a PG. I actually think it would be better, a little more, a little nastier than what they show. But that's me.
I think I would pay to see an uncut version.
Yeah, he is no fucking teenager.
No, no. It just, I'm having, my brain's just screaming Lolita.
Where's Sue Lyon and James Mason when you need them? Seriously. And there is Michael Pataki. There he is.
You know, the director just said to him, imagine you wake up hungover on Monday.
Right. And you need lots and lots of blood. And that's exactly what it is. Uh-oh, they're both getting in the back seat. Now, back in the day, if you look at vampire films, you know, the vampires were Bela Lugosi and Christopher Lee, and they were erudite, and they were, you know, that's exactly not the case here. This is one of the first times where you saw a vampire be really vicious right from the get-go. Also, we did a podcast on Monday with Mark DeWitzio about Kolchak the Night Stalker, and David Chase also wrote an episode of that with a vampire that was very feral. So that was sort of the idea. I don't know. If you've been in underground and haven't had blood, are you going to be that freaking strong to take off a...
I don't know if I... Even if I were that strong, I don't know if I could bring myself to hurt a car like that.
Yeah, really.
Excuse me again.
Okay, so the whole point here is, ouch.
Yeah.
Here she is. She's screaming. Why is she not running away?
Well, the script didn't say to. So.
No. And notice now the makeup is better.
Yeah. Now, one thing that this I realized when I was watching this again was back in the day, you know, up through the 70s even, when a vampire fed, most you got a little bit of blood on the side of its mouth just so you know, oh, it drank blood. Nowadays, vampires, they've developed some sort of eating disorder where they have to howl or something and all the blood just comes out of their mouth.
Yeah.
It's like it doesn't make sense to me.
So here he is.
Looking a lot better.
Looking a lot better. And he needs a place to sort of hide for daily life. Okay, so that guy with the toupee, that is a bad fucking toupee.
The one in the...
The black. That's a toupee. I wonder how much he paid for it. Seriously. It's like Willie. Do you remember that thing where you put the hair on the bald guy?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Well, at some angles, it kind of looks like the spray-on hair.
Yeah.
As seen on TV stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, here we have exposition, people. It's basically them giving, you know, what's going on with the girl, and I'm the doctor, and all that sort of shit. So... Just go with it for a while.
Introducing us to the town drunk.
No.
Why not ask how a grown man can be lifted up and dropped onto a tall gravestone?
Yeah, really. I'm going to say something. The sets aren't particularly convincing.
No.
No. So I gotta say something about her. I think she does a pretty damn good job given the role. And you'll see what happens
she
with
does.
Her. You know, she really does. And there are some scenes a little later. Okay, so now we know she's been impregnated by the vampire. What is this the first movie that ever did that? I think so. I'm
yeah,
not sure.
I mean, it might easily be at least among the first, because they weren't even allowed to talk about stuff like that for years.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Now, if you go back into the Marvel universe, of course, Blade, when did Blade come around? That was late 60s, I think. He was half vampire, half man. So, you know, I never followed comic books, so I don't know the origin story, whether he was raped or whether it was science or whatever the case would be. But in a case like this, this is the first time I remember ever seeing this, and I have seen so many vampire films at this point, it's not even funny. And I grew up watching Chiller Theater in Pittsburgh. All the Universals, all the Hammers, and of course, then you get into Dracula AD 1972, and the same year this came out, and that came out, Blackula came out.
I just looked it up. Blade's first appearance in the comics was 1973, so about the same time as this film.
Okay,
so,
which actually is a little later than this. So, yeah.
Maybe this was more influential than we thought.
Well, you know, I mean, it is an interesting idea. I really do, and I think that came from David Chase. What happens if you have a half-breed? No? And that sort of thing. Of course, you know, these days, you know, it's a product of rape. And with I'm certainly sure that that's not kosher these days, but nonetheless, I can't think of any other way to do it. See, I do like this guy. Yeah, it's like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about?
He's the reasonable one. Yeah, he's
yes.
The one you're supposed to think is the idiot.
Right. He's the reasonable one.
Now, this is something I didn't understand. You had a woman who's recovering from something awful, apparently put in the same room as a psych ward patient. A stereotypical psych ward patient, anyway.
Right.
I'm not sure that would ever happen, and it just doesn't make sense. I know we're not supposed to look too deeply into that, but...
Well, let me put it this way. You're absolutely right, and we'll move on from there. That's exactly the point. I love 70s movies. Everybody fucking smokes. It's a great
yeah.
thing.
I haven't smoked in years, and watching these movies just...
mm-hmm. And I'm going to say something very interesting here. You know, who was the costume designer? Because they need to be fired.
Throughout this movie, or at least the first half of this movie, I couldn't be sure what year it took place in. Because it shows later on, but you're led to think anywhere from the early 30s to the 40s or 50s for the first part of the movie. And I'm like, okay, what?
Okay, so think about it. Think about it for a second. Okay, this would be 50s. If it's 1972, it would be late 40s, early 50s. Because what happens later when we see Michael Pataki again, he's doing something and the child is of age. So that's at least 18 years, right?
At least, but
So my feeling is this is late 40s.
Yeah, you look at him and he's like all the, well, I'll talk about it when we get there. That is a great scene. I love that scene.
With the... Yeah, he's pretty feral. He's not your... Oh, Jesus, God.
Slasher movie. I mean, years later, a few years after this, the same ideas would be used in Anne Rice's books.
Right.
Vampire Rising and is starving and just kind of goes nuts to feed.
Right. So if you start looking at it from this perspective, this movie has a lot more influence than a lot of people give it credit for.
Or at least... Yeah.
Go ahead, finish your thought, man. Or at least...
Oh, sorry. Got caught up in the movie. Or at least was foretelling the future, because... I don't know. It just, maybe they, I don't know.
You know, the interesting thing about her is I love the look. She's not gorgeous, but, you know, she's almost like an angel. She's terrific in a lot of ways with those cheeks. And, of course, now...
Very much the girl next door.
Yeah.
The babysitter. Now, in any other horror movie, she would be the final girl.
Right. But she's the initial girl, and there's... It's almost the same thing if you think about it, because if she doesn't make this decision here, we don't have a movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is also another thing that I... Sorry about that.
There they are!
I don't recall. I don't recall being talked about much in movies in the early 70s.
Right.
Teen pregnancy, abortion, that was really taboo.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, I don't understand who this woman is, the enabler, caretaker, whatever. She just shows up and then is in the movie for a minute or two and then disappears.
Right.
But...
Thank you. I do like his cop, though. Not so much his hair, but I do like him.
He does have a really cool, almost Exorcist lit scene, so.
Uh-huh. And there's Pataki. Looking a lot better.
I'm constantly struck all through this movie by the lighting. It's so, it reminds me of film noir.
Yes.
So much. It's just the stark contrast, and I love it. Even if it kind of doesn't work sometimes, it makes this movie for me for the most part.
Well, the one thing I always talk about films, it doesn't matter what the budget is. It really doesn't. If you have a passion for the story that you're telling and a passion to get that story on film, that shows. And for a low-budget feature, this is really well done. I wouldn't love this movie so much if there weren't elements of it that I just think that are fantastic. Another thing we haven't talked about is the score. I think the score is really good.
The score is, it doesn't overpower anything.
No.
You kind of just forget it's there, but it still sets the mood so well.
Right.
I think the birds agree.
Gotta admit, that's good acting when you're dealing with cardboard sets.
It at least sounds like so.
This is pretty brutal.
Yeah.
So here's a question. We don't see it, but is it better not to have seen it? Or would you rather see the splatter?
I honestly think that because we get to see how inhuman Pataki is in the role, I prefer not seeing it.
Yeah, I agree. So another film I think that this had influence on, and I'm not sure if not, would be It's Alive.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see that. That must be a big baby.
Yeah, that's got to be a huge one.
Thank you.
I love her.
Her reaction.
Yeah.
She looks like Kirstie Alley.
Yeah.
We couldn't afford a real baby, so...
So this is where we start to get into what was considered the most difficult part for the censors to deal with. And this is where I know a lot of cuts were taken. Of course, she has a vampire baby. So you can imagine what the baby wants. Okay? That's not milk. It ain't milk. So this is what this whole sequence is rather unnerving, to say the least. And of course this is where the poster comes from too. With the baby with blood coming out.
I wonder if this influenced the movie Demon Seed at all.
I don't know. That's a good question. I just, you know, again, this the whole thing about this film. Okay. There's, and that is a real.
That's actually really unnerving.
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely unnerving.
As much for the sound. As much because of the sounds as because of the baby, but...
Oh. Yeah, yeah. This is where a lot of this was cut. And they replaced it with And that's unnerving too, that song.
It is.
So the one thing you've got to really, you know, so the whole thing with the needles.
That is way more realistic than I expected. Mm-hmm. I don't flinch at a lot of gore in movies, but...
Right.
I wasn't expecting that.
And him in the darkness looking at the light. I love that sense of, that's very visual.
this song, the use of that song is perfect. It really is.
And now, 20, 30 minutes into the film, we get William Smith. And, of course, that's not a college campus. That's a high school.
Well, but it's adult night classes. I mean, have an elderly lady in there.
Well, here he is as an adult trying to find his father. And of course, Michael Pataki, it's adult. Guess who the prop is? It's Night School. That's Michael Pataki. So I had mentioned earlier that this was an influence to Abel Ferrara, and Abel has absolutely verified that in interviews. When Abel in the 90s, late 90s, did a film called The Addiction with Lily Taylor and Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken was a night professor. And at his college. And he got the idea from this. Now it goes in a completely different direction because it's Abel Ferrara and it's religious and it's philosophical and such. And this is much more, you know, shock cinema. But nonetheless, he gave this props as being one of the reasons that he and Nick St. John wrote that film with the college in mind and night classes in mind.
And again with the amazing lighting.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier, I think it was off when we were discussing it, that he's a cross between Jack Palance and who else did he mention?
The guy who played Hedy Lamarr in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. Right. To me, it's much more Jack Palance.
Yeah, but it's the hair that rings to mind.
Yeah, you got a point.
But it definitely has the striking features of Palance.
I do love those leather coats, those suede, fake suede leather coats of the era. Yeah, this isn't about seduction. This is about, I'm going to fucking, like...
I'm going to mess you up.
Yeah. He's very much a feral vampire. This is not...
This isn't Bram Stoker or...
Yeah.
Any of the classic vampires. Looking fed.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is something about 70s hair that's scary. Truly scary.
Yeah. And timeless. Not timeless. You know when the film, because they never changed it, no matter what era the movie is set in, they always had the 70s mm-hmm. hair.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but I never ran across a class in college like this.
I took a folklore class, and it covered it, something like this. It was really fascinating, actually.
Yeah, when I was in college, it was basically... I ended up with an English writing major, but I had a minor in philosophy, so I was much more into philosophy.
That was my minor as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have to talk about it. His use of capital letter, small letter, capital letter, it just comes across as insane to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was on purpose, but it definitely worked for his character. Like a little,
yes.
little nuance.
So the interesting thing is, how did he get hired at this college? That's a good question. They never answered that. I'm sure if I'm hiring someone at a college, I'm going to check their resume. So what kind of resume did he give?
Well, I mean, it's easy in the 70s to fake that, but the interview, wouldn't that normally be in the daytime?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, that's a funny thing. In the addiction, there's a workaround in that. Because they say that it's the eyes. That if they see the sun through the eyes, so he always has if he's out in the day, he has sunglasses. So I like it that it's the Church of England and not the Catholics. I like that whole idea that he.
This is a whole bit, this background, that I wish they would have expanded on.
I wish they would have given us a couple scenes. Actual scenes. Yeah, I agree. But they couldn't afford it, so it's in the script.
Or at least, you know, talking about it more. It's fascinating. And it gives mm-hmm. a lot of character insight that you just kind of have to guess on otherwise.
Yes, we're not talking much because we like this part of it. The one nice thing I like about this is Pataki, who had very few lead roles, he really is magnetic in this role.
He is.
He's good. And he outclasses almost everyone. I'm sorry. I love William Smith, but Bill Smith is no friggin' actor. He's not. He's a pretty boy.
He's
okay.
He's LeBron. He's the...
Yeah.
I mean, you look at him, he's like, oh, you're imposing. But Pataki comes across as imposing because for different reasons, not being a big
right.
guy.
You did not come here to discuss mm-hmm. your It's a very interesting this is the one point where he is being more like Lugosi. Which is interesting. So he can do it both ways.
Yeah. The movie goes out of its way to let you know that he's not just like some kind of an aristocrat. He's a criminal. He's not just a vampire. He's
yeah.
a criminal. He's a beast, and they yep. make him the lowest kind of criminal society sees.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that. He's an aristocratic monster.
Mm-hmm. And there it is, Mysteries of New England.
So it looks like a rather old book for a book that shouldn't be more than maybe 30 years old.
Yeah.
Not creepy at all.
Yeah, really. It's like, I want to fuck you.
It's
Good
just
God.
Sort of him saying, I want to smell your hair. It's not sexy. It's creepy.
The funny thing is, that's a nice shot.
It was.
Okay. These people can't fucking dance. I'm just saying.
No. It's embarrassing.
It's incredibly embarrassing. You know, it's all about white people, but you got a black couple there. They're not fucking dancing either. It's like seeing
everybody dance like you're white.
Yeah. I can tell you one thing, it ain't Soul Train. That's for sure.
No. I love how he says no to dancing after he eyes everyone who's dancing. It's like, nope, not on your life.
And I'm sorry, the Ruffles were a thing in the 70s I just didn't fucking get. Ruffled shirts.
Unless they were in a Hammer film, I really don't think they belonged. But you
exactly.
Even had them in, like, Logan's Run.
Yeah. Like, no. No. And the other thing, too, is the 70s, the fashions, you know, they made clothes that made sure I wasn't going to get laid. You ever see bell-bottom trousers? Those things were fucking awful.
Yeah, they
yeah,
were.
Everyone wore them.
Thankfully, I was very young in the 70s, and my memories of bell bottoms are minimal. So there are pictures that exist of me in them.
Oh, that's frightening. You know, at one point
it's
I
like
had
a
porn stash. It's frightening. Now, one of the things I do like about this film, and of course we touched on it with the history of this character of Crichton Croft, is that they made a whole complete different mythology, which I do like very much. You know, and they subvert a lot of the tropes in this. This was one of the first to really subvert tropes. It wasn't until you got to Martin where they were really subverted, but nonetheless.
They wanted to keep the basics of Hollywood vampires.
Right.
Put a nice spin on it.
Okay. You want to get a little closer to your mic, by the way, to your phone.
Is that better?
That's better. So the interesting thing here is how he reacts. You know, he's half and half, so he's fighting, you know, his natural nature, or at least half his natural nature. So this whole thing with her roommate and that sort of thing is I think is sort of superfluous, to be honest.
Yeah, but it does help set up the stuff that happens next. So.
Right. Well, that's the only reason it's there. That's.
Okay, this is one of the biggest leaps in movie history.
Logic. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. How?
They never really specify how he survives, William Smith. Does he survive on blood? Of course, they don't really talk about food. You know, he's not eating, so they don't really tell you that.
Well, they do, because he has some nearly raw meat.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
Again, one of those great little details.
Yes. It's been a while since I've seen this. But I know the movie rather well, having loved it so much. You know, at least with physical media now, you can own this and watch it all the time, or you know, go to YouTube and watch it. Back in the day, you could only see it on TV once in a great while. And back in the day when you were watching Up All Night and that, I was working at the music store, or I was in New York City. And so I didn't get cable or was working too hard to you know, notice that it was on TV. Yeah.
And even if you got physical media then, because they released a lot of these on VHS or Beta, it was so much harder to find stuff.
And yeah.
You had to really look.
You know, the thing about the old stores, I mean, you'd go to Blockbuster, you'd go to Hollywood Video. I always preferred going to the mom and pops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they were the ones that would take a chance on the stuff that the big chains wouldn't take. And so, you know, that's where I saw Black Devil Doll and stuff like that for the first time. The movies that were made specifically for video.
That's how I saw Caligula for the first time.
Uh-huh.
a video store owned by an elderly couple. They had all those. So, I'm not sure what that implied, that he can see what she's seeing or what the hero is seeing.
That's a good question. I don't know. Part of this is that he does have humanity in him. He's not fully a vampire. Of course, that comes into play later.
Yep.
But that's another thing too, because this is a setup that when we get to it, we get to the end of the film, it takes a turn you don't expect.
Yeah.
Which I think is very good.
This movie does a really good job at keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. And even though it is a low-budget film, you know, with more character actors and actors you don't know, I think it's rather well done.
It is.
And certainly they attempted to do something different here than what the general Hammer films were and such. A much different take on it. And that music, too, is just that sort of like music box music is rather disconcerting.
But at the same time, while you're watching the movie, you barely notice the music or the mood it's setting, but it's still effective.
Right.
Which is great.
Now, my only caveat to this is here he is, you know, Croydon, Croft, Lockwood, whatever you want to call him. And there's all sorts of people dying. You know, where are the police here? No, seriously.
That would make sense.
I'm just looking up these other actresses here.
Some of them come across as being stage actors more than anything
right.
else, or maybe television actors.
By the way, I love the tagline. Have you ever checked out the tagline? Father and son, related by blood. Anybody's blood.
Met you today, but I love you.
Okay, I never got why she was so enamored and wanted to become a vampire. I don't get that.
I'm not sure why in a building full of students, all the students are apparently in their 30s and 40s, and she has to be careful about leaving.
Seriously.
Well, that took a that was
yep.
What's the word I'm trying to look for? It took me by surprise when it happened, but
right.
It was like straight out of a giallo film, you know, the way he did
yeah.
it. I just loved that.
So as far as William Smith, probably the biggest film he was ever in, he was in The Outsiders, and he was in Red Dawn in smaller roles.
Really?
Rumblefish, too. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but very small roles, not anything big. He was Conan's father in Conan the Barbarian.
That's where I recognize him from.
Okay. He also had a small role in Any Which Way You Can. He was in the Frisco Kid.
This is another scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's straight out of, again, straight out of a giallo film. It's...
Yeah. So this actress is Lynn Peters, okay, and this was basically her last film. She never did a film after this.
Really? That's rather sad. She's one of the
better did a lot of TV
parts
series,
of the film.
But this is the only film she ever did. And this was the last thing she ever did on film. Which is interesting. And notice how you know, this is all I'm sure there was an R-rated cut of this. There had to be.
Oh, I just noticed a handprint on the door. It's just a little detail.
Yeah.
I noticed that there was a handprint on the inside of the, while she's opening the door.
Yep.
Just...
Now, like, where are the fucking cops? Seriously.
And then she's, like, hanging out at Lockwood's house like nothing happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a drastic time leap, but I'm also sure she recognized who that was.
Yep. And of course, you had the seance tonight. So that's interesting. So there's Yellow, there's Vampire, there's sort of a police procedural, and there's a seance. They're throwing everything at the wall, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. But what they do, I mean, a lot of it they do well. They do the giallo, and they do the more film noir stuff really well. And sometimes it feels like the vampire is almost an afterthought, which isn't a bad thing.
No. Now, this guy here, he reminds me of someone.
I keep thinking about, like, 80s TV shows like Welcome Back, Cotter. They always had guys that looked and acted like him.
All right. You know, a little bit like Albert Brooks. All right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think we're supposed to like him.
No, we're not. The other thing I really like about Pataki is his eyes. There's
yes.
something about his eyes.
Maybe he really is a vampire.
No, that's Willem Dafoe, but that's beside the point.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have a total experience, that's for sure. Yeah, go do a seance with a vampire. Sounds like a great idea. You know, it does strain credulity just a bit. But then again, if you watch this the first time, and you're stoned off your ass, you really don't fucking care.
So I might be making too much of it, but Anne is her name, I guess, the blonde love interest.
Yeah.
Her dress is so Bram Stoker the
oh yeah,
like Lucy from Dracula.
Yep. Very much so.
Everyone else is wearing like formal evening wear, semi-formal. And then here she is wearing this Victorian gown.
Now, I have a question for you. When we talk about seances in film, do you have a favorite one that you've ever seen?
Oh, wow. Manitou.
Oh, I love that movie.
One of my favorite seance scenes.
Now, for me, I tell you the one that really creeped me out was The Changeling.
Because they do
a different... That's the one where they do the automatic writing.
That was brilliant. That whole movie was brilliant, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so he's sitting here basically, relax. I can't relax when you're talking like that, dude. That creeps me out.
You know, the only way you're going to relax is if you have a joint or something like that. It is the 70s, guys. Come on.
Yeah, they were probably all taking pills, and they've had a few drinks already, so they're relaxed. I think she's in the wrong kind of film.
Yeah.
And everyone's really just cool with that.
Yeah, really. It's okay.
So, he just accused Croft, Croydon, whatever, Lockwood, of being a murderer and everything, and yeah, they're still cool.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
This is where everything goes off the rails. So.
Yeah. You know, that's another thing. Here he has her in Lockwood's house still. Like, if I knew this, she'd be in the fucking car. We'd be going. I'd make her safe and come back.
Oh, but they have to have a romantic interlude.
Well, of course. Now that's pretty cool.
It is.
And of course it squibs in the back.
Oh well, yeah, but it's still
effective.
Again, the violence in this seems so much more brutal without them showing it.
Right.
For some reason, it just.
You know, I said at the beginning, this was a brutal film.
It is.
And it really is. And it belies
its
PG rating.
Isn't that the case, though, with a lot of the most renowned, violent, brutal films? When you watch them, there's not a lot of violence shown. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Halloween. It's all implied. I just love that he was caught on fire and it barely it really doesn't faze him much.
No. Nice. This is a good fight, man.
It really is. It doesn't feel like movie choreographed. It feels like...
No. He still hasn't figured it out yet. Nice. Yeah, by the way, that was sugar water, no question. Sugar glass.
And paper.
Yes, paper too. Now, as I said, this goes in a direction that you don't expect. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, that can't feel good for even an actor.
No.
That sounds horrible.
This is brutal, man. This is not.
It really is.
No, you talk about exploding heads, or you talk about all this gore, and this is just brutal, not even more so.
Yeah. I think part of it is the violence is almost nonchalant.
Yeah.
It's like he just reached back and snaps off a table leg. It's just like...
Really? Well, now, here we go.
Blood, or is he on a red carpet? I can't tell.
No, that's blood. That's blood.
Okay.
That's blood.
Yeah.
And what just happened? Now, keep in mind, this is the 70s, and it's probably the most depressing decade of film. So that's a hint. Not particularly, you know, those are fake teeth. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean. He looks like Tommy Wiseau right there.
Yeah!
You're tearing me apart, Ann. Yeah, now that you've seen it, you won't unsee it, will you?
No, you won't. Nice. There, we just gave a nice shout out to the room, and that's all courtesy of Brian.
That's a classic.
Very well done, sir. So, how do you feel about your first commentary watch?
Oh, that's fun. That's so fun.
So, yeah, for another one sometime?
Sometime I probably would be because, you know, I love movies. I just love them, so.
Well, let me put it this way. If you ever have an idea, you can certainly let me know. We'll be glad to do it. You did really well.
Great.
Sir. Absolutely.
Thank you. It was fun.
Yeah, and that's what these are. You know, I mean, we're not professionals, but we know enough. And you came up with some really good comments there. The Tommy Wiseau one was absolutely fucking dead on.
It's like they could be twins. Or father and son.
Yeah, something like
a lot.
That.
But
good stuff. Okay, so let me do a little bit of housekeeping here. So we're going to be ending up our Halloween week tomorrow with Adam Ferenc is going to be hosting his show, which is Cafe Great Mission, and we will be doing our favorite TV and films for Halloween and scary movies and scary TV shows. And that's just going to be a fun show. And then on Sunday, Danae will be back with Danae's Dungeon. And we're going to be doing exploitation on Sunday. And on Tuesday, I'm taking the day off. There will be no ISF podcast simply because I've worked all week this week. I'm going to take the day off. And we'll have shows later in the week. So that's what we have planned. Also, these shows are listed both on the Deviant Legion and the ISF list. And you can catch any of the shows that we did this week right now. Including this one later when it's archived. And so if you're not doing anything on Saturday, Halloween Day, you can certainly listen to our podcast because we had a watch of Nomads, we had a watch of Jigoku, we had a show with Mark DeWitziak on Kolchak the Night Stalker, and then, of course, we had tonight's show. And we did also a show yesterday with Tales of Halloween with Rachel Elaine. So please just check us all out and enjoy your Halloween week. You know, we're all stuck inside more or less, so we've got to find something to do. So what you have any plans specifically for Halloween? You're going to watch any specific films, Ryan?
No, a friend of mine is having a Halloween wedding, so I'm going to be there. So, no movies, just a wedding.
Well, you know, be safe, you know, and that sort of thing. Certainly, and enjoy the day. You have any last thoughts on the film?
No, it's a much better movie than you would when you first see it. It doesn't seem like it would be a good movie, but it's far better than its production value, I guess you could say. It's really pretty
good.
Right,
it's one of those movies that you underestimate because you think it's just going to be a schlock fest, and it's not. There's actually some intelligence in a lot of that has to go to David Chase. And also, I think that the performance, particularly by Pataki, is really, really good. Really good. And so I hope you all enjoyed it. Go ahead, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so thank you very much for listening. Please join us tomorrow for Adam Ferenc's show. That'll be at 8 o'clock EST. Folks, thank you very much, and good night. Say good night, Ryan.
Good night.
Okay, we're almost there. Give me a second. And I'll say it again. Good night.
Good night.